the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, we're coming back at you one more time with a new installment of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. It's Bobby Golden, like always, have my co-host Jason Bond with me. And today we have a very special guest, alumni and former researcher here, and I guess extension appointment before you left at DREC, Tim Walker. You are the general manager of Horizon Seed, which is a rice seed company business. How are you, Tim?
Doing good, Bobby. Jason, good to be with you guys. Appreciate the opportunity to talk rice with you today.
Welcome back to Stonewall, man.
Good to be back. Good to be back. I was a little bit alarmed at the appearance of the crops on the way down. What a difference a year makes. I traveled through the Delta about this time last year, and boy, it was a beautiful crop, and not so much out there today.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly. I can count on my hand the number of rice acres that actually look good. You know, I had a couple consultants.
You can count on your hand the number of fields that look good in general, regardless of crop.
True. You're right. And it's been wet. It's been nasty. It's been ugly. We've had drift. Everything, seedling disease, everything that could happen to date has happened. But I got the first picture last night of a pretty field that was unsolicited. So.
Yeah, I don't ever get those. I don't ever get anything but the problems.
Looking back at, through my history of it, that you're exactly right, Jason. You always got a distorted view of the crop because you spent so much time working on the small percentage of problems than you did, just observing the good-looking ones that were out there.
Yeah, I spend the majority of my day feeling like Chicken Little.
Now, immediately after that good picture come through, the same guy sent me a picture of a tractor with a relift pump saying, oh, by the way, there's rice under that water he's pumping off, and it's stretched for 2 weeks. So I think he was softening me up before the blow hit.
Yeah.
No, we're definitely, we've talked about the other crops, and there's just nothing smooth right now, and there's no easy answers. And I would even go one step further. A lot of them, there's not a good answer for a lot of the questions that are getting thrown out there right now, just given the situation with the water, and then the situation combining that with the date that we're at now.
Yeah. So, Tim, I guess before we begin talking, just tell us a little bit about what Horizon Ag is, what it does, and how y'all function on a day-to-day basis supplying our inputs in the rice industry.
Sure. So Horizon Ag is, I guess, approaching 20 years old now as a company.
That's hard to believe.
It really is. I remember when Horizon was first, I guess, started, and you started hearing of Horizon Ag with the launch of Clearfield Rice. And that's been the major part of our business through the, almost 20 years. We have stewarded Clearfield Pure Line Rice. And basically, we're a conduit from the breeders, BASF, and the seed channel. So we're multiply the seed and then market the seed. Just recently, over the past couple of years, we've transitioned from a foundation seed company into a wholesale model where we're actually the direct supplier, to retail. So that's been a very interesting change, exciting in a lot of ways. Certainly has had its fair set of challenges as well, just with respect to the same challenges we're going to talk a lot about today. Crop, you still got to make a crop, and all of those particular challenges, the business part a lot of time is the easy part. It's making the crop and all of that goes in. But so in addition to Clearfield, we launched Provisia Rice last year. This is the second year of PVL01, the first and really only Provisia variety that's available for the Provisia rice system. We do have a substantial amount of acres planted this year of PVL02, which we're excited about.
My acreage looks really good. That's one of the best looking fields I have.
Well, we really gambled this year and brought some seed back from Puerto Rico, planted it extremely thin, just trying to do everything that we can to maximize our opportunity for sales next year, knowing what we know about this new variety. And but it looks remarkably well. This year is probably the worst year to go low on seeding rate.
That's true.
But we chose to do that, and we're very fortunate that, you know, seedling vigor is tremendous on it. It's done a great job in spite of the sort of the negative environment that we've had out there. Across, look, this has been across the southern U.S. rice. I mean, if you look at it, Louisiana is not that far behind. But getting a stand in South Louisiana this year was just an extreme challenge. So it's just been a difficult start. But, you know, hopefully our challenges will be on the front end, and we'll finish strong.
Tim, when you talk about seed production and saying planting at a low seeding rate, tell folks how low we go a lot of times in,
now, you
in
know,
that arena, because
if he does that, then somebody's going to try to do that next year, and me and you're going to have to go out there and
proceed at their own risk. Yeah. But it's fascinating, how low we can actually go in an effort to get product into the hands of the folks that want it and need it.
Sure. Jason. So my original plan was to plant 10 pounds of seed to the acre and felt relatively good about that. We were fortunate that we had some additional seed that did finish strong in Puerto Rico, so we were able to up that to the 15 to 20 pound per acre seeding rate. But you know, again, you know, it's the law of the harvest, right? So we can take that risk in seed production and generate almost the same amount of seed as, you know, if we would have planting at a normal, you know, 60 to 80 pound seeding rate.
Right.
Wow. I just still, you know, when we were down in South Texas, down there with Jocko, seeing that, it's literally amazing to see, you know, 10 pounds of seed out there on most oftentimes a 10-inch space, and it just blows your mind.
Well, you know, the number one, I mean, the drill capabilities today versus even 10 years ago.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to do it with that tie drill we were jacking with last night, Bobby.
Yeah,
no.
Probably not. Probably not. But, so the drill technology, I think the seeding, the seed treatments are certainly much better. And then, you know, the thing that I'm always amazed at, you know, is the percent of surviving plants typically is much, much higher on a lower seeding rate than it is on a higher seeding rate. So it's definitely not a linear function.
Well, and you think about all that put together, and you think about where we come from, and, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we were still planting 2 bushels of rice every day in every rice field. And, you know, nowadays, some fields, and with the purebred in lines, are, you know, down around 50, 55.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's 55 is real common. And that's come down in the time that we've been doing.
Right.
You know, that since we've been here, it's progressively come down.
Well, and I know, you know, and I'm just saying this, y'all two guys probably helped that seeding rate coming down more than any with the research y'all done when you were here, Tim. So thank you for that. Probably hurts you now since you're trying to sell rice seed. But
well, you know, if you look at it in those terms, absolutely. You know, of course, at the end of the day, I think I've always had this philosophy, whether I was with the university or now in private industry, you know, I think our goal has to be the farmer being healthy. And if he's healthy, then we can all figure out a way to be healthy in business. But which is unfortunate right now, because he's not healthy. There's tremendous, you know, challenges throughout agriculture. Now, you know, now with all the XM satellite radios and all of that, I mean, and the Twitter connections, you know, we're seeing every day stories from throughout the United States. And, you know, my heart goes out to our industry as a whole. We, you know, make no bones about it. We're having our challenges as a seed company this year. But that goes with the whole industry. No, if anyone says this is a great year for them in agriculture, I'd like to know what they're doing.
Well, you're talking about the agriculture industry as a whole. Let's narrow that down a bit and talk about the health of the U.S. rice industry, or from our standpoint, more particularly, the Mid-South U.S. rice industry.
Yeah. Guys, I've been saying for years that we have some challenges. I mean, I personally, from my background, I'm very analytical, and so I've tried to analyze the rice industry as I would.
Tim's a chemist, for those of you that don't know.
I tried to analyze the rice industry as I would, you know, anything. You know, what are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? What are the opportunities? And what are the threats? And, you know, guys, I throw this fact out there and be curious to know how many people know this, but do you know that the United States is number 10 as far as the largest importer of rice? We're number 10.
You go to the store, or you go to Sam's, or you go somewhere like that, and if you're paying attention and you just look at where that bag of rice come from, there's often not more rice on the shelf that come from out of country than in country.
Yeah, and that's a shame, because you know, Jason, you and I, when we were really getting going here in Stoneville, I mean, 240,000 to 260,000 acres in the Mississippi Delta was automatic.
Right.
I'd be curious what you guys think you'll have out there this year.
Not 240.
Yep.
I'll let Bobby comment beyond that.
Based on everything up to yesterday, we're likely to scare the heck out of 100,000 acres.
Yeah.
A lot of calls the last several days about desperation seeding, water seeding. And, you know, depending on what this weather does, there's still guys out there that need to replant that's failed a crop the first time. So if we get to 100, we'll be lucky.
Yeah.
With the bean price slipping a little bit the other day, I thought I had a couple calls about guys pushing acres over to rice. Right. So
I talked to a guy that was pulling some acres out of cotton back to rice. It was rice last year, just because he couldn't get the beds up. And mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's hard to tell. And when Owen Taylor calls every week, I've been telling him, man, I have no clue. Literally, I think you talk to Jared Harkery across the river or anybody, they have no clue. So I would say anywhere between 90 and 110,000 acres is probably where we'll end up.
Right. Right.
What's your thought?
Well, my thought is probably like you. Who knows? There are so many factors going into it right now. I mean, I would say even 3 to 4 weeks ago, I thought there was a chance, you know, for flat acres in Mississippi. Within 5% of the acres in Arkansas. I've known for quite some time that Texas was going to be down substantially from last year. Louisiana, we thought, would be flat. The more data we get in from Louisiana right now, we think there's a possibility that they're down in South Louisiana. North Louisiana is just like you guys. Who knows?
Right.
I think it's going to change literally by the day from now till June 10th. Because, you know, you've got prevent planting coming up May 25th. That's a really good option for some, though it looks like a profitable option for others. You still have to have cash flow into the farm enterprise to keep debts, taken care of and things like that. So it's going to be literally an enterprise by enterprise decision.
Well, and you talk about that prevented planting, and it brings up the question of, you know, how does planting date influence rice yields? And you went a long way to creating an awful large data set when you were here to accommodate that question. And I think, what did we determine on that day? 120 of the year was kind of the cutoff point, and after that, it was about 0.25% a yield loss per day. So when I was talking to a guy the other day about it, I said, you know, so basically every 4 days after day 120, you're going to lose 1% yield. So if you gauge that against your prevented planting, it could give you an indication of, can I still go, mm-hmm. or do I need to stay?
Yeah. So anything that we're talking about, you know, May 15th and beyond, you know, I don't want anyone to say that I'm saying that we can cut the same yields as we would had, say, April 10th. Over a broad collection of years and environments and all of that. Now, I will say this year, and looking at some of the stands of rice and some of the challenges that we're having with some of the stands of rice right now, we may plant some May 20 rice that does every bit as well as April 10 rice.
Or March 21st rice, because a lot of that setting the ground pretty ugly.
Yeah, because, I mean, guys, you know, I mean, the rice that is set there since March the 20th or even April 10th, we're in prime conditions for seedling disease. We're in prime conditions for a weakened plant that gets a sniff of drift that just, you know, whether it's drift or whether it's seedling disease, it's going to be very difficult. Hats off to you guys for, you know, I know y'all going to be running up down the road trying to decipher what to do there, but it's going to be a challenge for some of the rice that's just, you know, that's been setting in the ground for quite some time. Contrary, if we're able to, which we are in Arkansas today, it got actually started back a little bit yesterday. For that rice, I mean, you're looking at 5 to 7 days, it's going to jump out of the ground. In another 12 to 15 days, it's going to be ready to go to flood. And so, and the other thing, you know, you have to ask the question, what really hurts us in later planting? A lot of times it's the high nighttime temperatures that tend to happen more in mid to late July. So if you look at rice that's planted May 20th, we should get into August probably before we really get into that reproductive stage. So in all of our planting data, I remind you, yes, it's more variable May 20th, but there always seemed to be a little bit of a pickup in yield from a May 5th to like a May 20th.
Because you're getting on the backside of that.
I think you get on the backside of it. So, you know, I guess if anyone heard a message from me today, it's don't throw away rice as an option just because you're on May 20th, May 25th. I do think it's important to manage the inputs accordingly. And, you know, I don't know what you guys think about this, but my philosophy in managing a crop prior to flood was always, once the crop emerged, I went forward in the calendar to see when I wanted to flood it, and I backed my plan up accordingly to manage, you know, from the back to where we were, because I thought the flood was the most important thing. You know, we wanted to get to flood. We did everything to try to get to flood.
And now we're not flooding rice.
Right. Well, that's another conversation. So when you do it that way, you back up. Now you're only managing about 12 days there. And so, guys, I mean, I don't know what y'all think, but I think, you know, this is a prime year for a one, no more than two-shot herbicide program, maybe even a one-shot fertilizer program. I'd certainly think about not putting our starter fertilizer out. Because, you know, to be quite honest, flush is probably pretty much out the window right now. Let's just go to flood on this later planted rice for the most part. I mean, there's always exceptions to the rule, but I think we're going to have to manage those inputs. But I think it gives us an opportunity to manage the inputs to still be, you know, to minimize loss or maximize the profit once we harvest this later planted crop.
I'm definitely tracking with you on that part, Tim, because you're gonna have an abbreviated to some degree pre-flood period. So from crop emergence until flooding, I think a problem that we have in 2019 with that is that we don't have 75% of our soybeans in the ground. We don't even have all the corn laid by yet.
What did Trent say a while ago? 30%?
Yeah, so everything is just piled on top of everything else right now. And so kind of taking devil's advocate route, there's bad points to everything being abbreviated too, because can you get around on all of it? But that's the conversations I have with people. You know, I make a suggestion like, no, nah, yeah. I can't get that done.
No,
and so then I got to shift fire and go a different direction.
Yeah, you're right, Jason. And to be quite honest, we ran into that last year, especially in Arkansas. We planted a big pile of the crop in a wad, and it got ready to flood. It also turned off hot and dry. I mean, literally, we had two Junes. We had an April and two Junes last year from a DD50 standpoint. And so what we did in that particular situation, we got behind the eight ball. Semi-dwarf varieties cannot stand to be behind the eight ball. I mean, I think we lost at least 20, if not 30 bushels to the acre in a lot of fields last year, simply because it was already tillering when we even tried to get it fertilized and flooded. And then it ended up being 10 to 14 days at the earliest to get to the bottom half of the field, not even complete the field flooding, with no rain to help. I don't even want to guess how many acres got to mid-season without having an incorporated, you know, fertilizer application. And then we wondered, you know, why our yields were off last year. So you're exactly right. In theory, I guess I should go back and say, in theory, it's going to give us an opportunity, but can we practically get it done? And that's going to be, again, a farm-by-farm situation. But I think from our standpoint of educating folks, we do need to educate them that if they can't do it on time, they are setting themselves up for substantial loss. And it's going to be hard to swallow much loss this year. Let me ask a question, guys. We kind of talked about the rice industry. I just want to say publicly congratulations for both of you guys getting involved in the Rice Leadership Program. I still value the time I spent in that program tremendously, and so I'm very excited for y'all to be in the program. But so now your trip one's behind you. What do you think?
Well, we had a great trip. We went to, you know, the Gulf Coast, toured through Texas, you know, some different things around Houston, and then Louisiana, ended up in New Orleans. And of course, I spent a lot of time in that part of the world in years gone by. So maybe I didn't see anything that I had never seen before that just wowed me. But what I told Bobby, you know, as we were making our way home, that I'd never seen it in a week. You know, I'd seen this part of it and that part of it and the other part of it, you know, at different times, but I had never seen it. You know, basically, we went from, you know, breeding a rice variety to selling it on the shelf in the course of 5 days. So that was good perspective. And I'm older, you know.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. I don't know about the class that you were in or some of the other classes, but if you look at the dynamic of our class, we got some guys that have been in the industry a while, and then we got some guys that, from the farmer standpoint, that are really relatively young, if you look at the national median age of the farmer. So there's a broad range of understanding currently, you know, and I think it makes for a good class, because Jason did mention this to me. He said, I think that, you know, some of the questions we were asking were good for those other guys to hear, because if you hadn't been in it as long as us, you might not ask that question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some of those boys don't remember when we didn't have Clearfield. I mean, I remember I was in school at LSU when they were doing all of that. And so,
you know, this is kind of getting way off the path, but Christian Richard and I were, I think, on the plane from Columbia back to Houston. And, you know, we were talking about, we had been on an international leadership trip down in Nicaragua and Colombia a couple of years ago. And he made the comment, he said, you know, it just seemed like when we were in the class, granted, I was in the class 05 to 07, when we were in the class, we talked a lot more. We interacted a lot more. And it dawned on us that now we all have phones. And even in Colombia, Nicaragua, there are very few places that I didn't have cell service, you know. And so we've seen tremendous change just from that time frame, you know, the mid-2000s to we were in, like I said, 2017 when we were in Nicaragua and Colombia together. So, but yeah, you're right. I mean, a lot of the education that I got from the program was literally, you know, riding in the van with all the guys. We had a broad swath of people in the rice industry and different ages. And yeah, that was, you know, very educational in and of itself.
Yeah, I think so. You know, we did introduce some guys to Cracklins, and I think they enjoyed that.
Well, Jason actually introduced me to Cracklins, so that's
it's a way of life, man.
That's right.
You got to embrace it.
Some of them didn't care for the souse too much, but they enjoyed Cracklins.
You know, and now. With Steve Linscombe running that thing, you know, you have the opportunity to spend 5 or 6 days with Steve, and you know that's always an opportunity that you better take advantage of,
because
you're definitely going to learn something from him, or he's going to ask you a question that makes you feel completely inadequate. You know, and you wonder, well, why didn't I ever think of that before?
Yeah.
It's just obvious, but you know, he just has a knack for doing that.
I guess you were asking Jason earlier what one of the special things he saw. I think the biggest thing that stuck out to me is, I like Jason, I've been around the Louisiana rice industry, but the Texas rice industry, how it operates, how they IP their lines is just astonishing. It blows my mind, because we think, you know, in the upper mid-south, it can't be done. Well, you go down there, and it's being done every day. So, I don't know, the logistics of pulling that off and cleaning, but it can be done. And I think that's one way that we could help the rice industry. Further, you know, what's your take? I saw in the news last night the canceled the new Iraqi tender. You know, what do you think that's going to do to rice price?
Well, yeah, you know, we listen to people that are certainly a whole lot smarter about the rice market than we are, and that has been a common comment on whether the price of rice is going to move up or stay flat to down. And Iraq is important. You know, it's extremely unfortunate, but when you look at the people that import rice, China's the largest importer of rice. We don't even have to go there
with
what all is going on. Iran and Iraq are certainly in the top, you know, I would say 10 of importers of rice. And we know that, you know, for a long
not
time.
Not looking healthy there either.
Those markets have been excluded, you know, probably more from political than anything. Cuba.
Yeah,
I mean, Cuba imports 500,000 metric tons a year, and we haven't been able to get any headway there. So, you know, that is all in the puzzle of the health of the Mid-South rice industry, is having access to those markets. And then the markets that we do have, but we really, you know, have to be serious about protecting those markets, because, again, when you look at the people that are that are importing rice, there's some pretty big hurdles for us to get rice into those countries. So I know I went around the world trying to answer that, but clearly any movement to Iraq is always a little spike.
Well, a lot of rice goes around the world because yeah. our domestic consumption isn't what it needs to be for our acreage.
No, I mean, 50% of what we grow goes out of the country. So, I mean, I would say that at least 50% of our efforts needs to be spent on making sure the markets that we do have remain healthy. I am encouraged a little bit. I mean, there's more and more news that Nicaragua, which was a 100,000-ton market for us at one point in time, they're back into the market a little bit. I mean, literally, we saw that market go to essentially zero a few years ago. So we're seeing some more rice from the U.S. go into Nicaragua. So anything we can get right now is a help. You know, Venezuela has been a market that's been, you know, up and down for us. We know there's some challenges there. So, you know, we just continue to hope that, you know, we get good buyers. But, you know, we are priced high in the world, and we have to be. You know, when you look at our subsidy system, we're not subsidized relative to the world. We demand a high price. So with demanding a high price, we have to make sure that people that are going to pay that type of price are getting what they want. And I think we've got some ground to make up there, which gets back into we're going to have to do a better job of separating rice based on the quality, not just milling quality, but all those things that go into quality based on what that particular market wants. I think Uruguay has done a tremendous job of that and certainly are very, very competitive in our export markets.
Tim, tell us, I mean, lifelong Mississippian and obviously, you know, very involved in the rice industry in Mississippi. Before we jump off, why don't you leave folks in Mississippi, you know, with an encouraging word.
Positive thought.
Yeah. Well, you know, first and foremost, I mean, I can't help but every time I get an opportunity to thank the good folks in Mississippi for giving me, you know, an opportunity to work in rice. You know, it's, you know, not often that a hillbilly, so to speak, you know, comes to the Delta and works in rice. And so that's where I cut my teeth in it. And I'm certainly, you know, proud of the time that I was given, you know, to work with rice farmers in Mississippi. And now having an opportunity to broaden that throughout the South. But rice is, you know, if you talk to these guys, I mean, especially the guys in Mississippi that are on the Sharkey and alligator clay type soils, rice works good on those soils. It's helped them to be extremely successful over the long haul. I know we've got some challenges right now, but rice has helped a lot of people in Mississippi be extremely successful in their farming enterprises. We can grow the crop extremely well in the Mississippi Delta, and we've got some challenges from a marketing standpoint and all of that, but, you know, it's when we're faced with challenges that we typically come out on the other side stronger, wiser, more prepared, you know, to meet the next set of challenges. And so I'm very encouraged that we have good leadership in Mississippi as well as throughout the southern United States, you know, that will there'll be enough like-minded people that will come together, face the challenges that we have, and come through this downturn extremely strong, and we'll have a lot better days ahead, no doubt in my mind. So thank you guys.
Yeah, Tim, well, we appreciate it. We're going to jump off now, and because I know we all have got a ton of things to do. So folks, we appreciate y'all listening, and of course, if we can do anything for you, call us and we will get to you soon.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.